The House votes to help pilots over 60 keep their jobs again. Canada's Safety Board has suggestions to help stop overrun accidents. And NASA will try to fix the shuttle while it's still on the pad. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, December 13th, 2007. By a vote of 390-0, the U.S. House of Representatives Tuesday passed legislation to increase the mandatory retirement age for U.S. airline pilots to 65. The legislation now goes to the Senate. If this story sounds like deja vu, it's because the House already approved a similar provision as part of its FAA funding bill. But as ANN reported, the Senate never acted on FAA reauthorization last year, and its own bill included a provision which would have forced the FAA back to the bargaining table with air traffic controllers, drawing a promise of a veto from President Bush. So, Minnesota Congressman James Oberstar sponsored a separate bill, H.R. 4343, titled the Fair Treatment for Experienced Pilots Act. It does not address the FAA reauthorization and is free of the labor bargaining language that prompted the Bush veto threat. If the Senate follows up, the bill will delete 121.383 from the FAR, allow pilots between 60 and 65 to fly provided there's an under 60 co-pilot on the crew, protect pilots over 60 from airline attempts to apply tougher standards than those for younger pilots, and even drop the requirement for a younger co-pilot on international flights if the International Civil Aviation Organization drops the requirement in international rules. It also directs the Government Accountability Office, which is the investigative wing of Congress, to evaluate any effect on aviation safety 24 months after passage of the bill. Like the language in the FAA reauthorization bill, H.R. 4343 would not allow pilots already past age 60 to come back to work, and requires unions and management to agree on any contract changes needed to implement the new age limit. A call for longer runways and new rules governing landing procedures during thunderstorms are two of the recommendations from Canada's Transportation Safety Board following an August 2005 runway overrun accident involving an Airbus A340 operating for Air France. As ANN reported, Flight 348 skidded off the runway at Toronto's Pearson International Airport as it landed during a fierce thunderstorm. All 309 passengers and crew escaped the burning wreckage, but 10 were seriously injured. In its final report issued on Wednesday, the TSB recommended Transport Canada mandate 300-meter overrun areas at each end of all Canadian runways. TSB Chair Wendy Tadros noted that that's already an international standard. Other recommendations include new rules about landing in thunderstorms, increased training, and a new regulatory requirement to compute required landing distances ahead of touchdown, taking weather conditions into account. CBC News reports many crews currently don't take that precaution. More detail on the report and reaction to it are available in the print version of this story on our website at aero-news.net. Technicians and engineers at NASA will conduct a test on Tuesday to see if they've ironed the bugs out of the fuel level sensors in the external tank of the shuttle Atlantis. The sensors are critical for safe operation, and as many as 3 of 4 have failed during recent countdowns. The test will involve pumping liquid hydrogen into the external fuel tank as it sits on the launch pad at Kennedy Space Center. NASA is hoping the tests will find the cause of the failures without moving the shuttle off the pad. If it needs to be rolled back to the vehicle assembly building and torn down, it could add months to a mission already months behind schedule. On Wednesday, the International Air Transport Association lowered its 2008 profit forecast for airlines worldwide, citing high fuel costs as the primary reason. Bloomberg reports IATA now projects airline earnings will fall 11% next year, and that U.S. airlines will lead that decline. IATA chief economist Brian Pierce also blames the U.S. housing slump. Quote, "That's very negative for consumer sentiment and for passenger sentiment in markets connected to the U.S." Unquote. 2007 will be the first year the worldwide airline industry has posted a profit since 2000, before 9/11. IATA figures show the industry as a whole is still $190 million in debt and ill-prepared to weather an economic downturn. Up next on ANN, a winter blast causes grief for Midwest travelers. Frontier Airlines finally launches its new Lynx subsidiary. And Northwest pilots go to court to fight both their employer and their union. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-Cessna.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for December 13, 2007. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plagg. More than 550 flights into and out of Chicago's O'Hare International Airport were canceled on Tuesday as a fierce ice storm hit the nation's midsection. As much as a quarter inch of ice was reported by the National Weather Service in the suburbs of DeKalb and Rockford, though Chicago itself was spared much of the storm. Still, Department of Aviation spokeswoman Karen Pride told the Chicago Tribune that rain and dense fog forced cancellations at O'Hare and Chicago Midway. Fortunately, many cancellations were announced before passengers departing Chicago had left for the airport. That kept lines manageable, but passengers connecting in Chicago weren't so lucky. Conditions in Chicago had returned to normal by Wednesday afternoon. Following a difficult gestation, Frontier Airlines proudly delivered its new Lynx subsidiary to the world last week. Flying 10 Bombardier Q400 turboprops with tail art that included a Lynx kitten, a wolf puppy, and a mountain lion cub, Lynx first took to the skies on Friday with an inaugural flight to Billings, Montana from Denver. The wholly owned subsidiary of Frontier Airlines Holdings Incorporated will serve destinations within a 750-mile radius of Denver. Sean Menke, Frontier president and CEO, says Lynx will help Frontier's long-term profitability and disagrees with critics of the launch's timing. Quote, "To me, it's the perfect time. We can move into markets with less competition and have more opportunity to feed connecting traffic through our hub, all with a very fuel-efficient aircraft that burns 30% less fuel than a comparably sized regional jet," unquote. As ANN reported, Lynx was originally supposed to launch on October 1st, but delays at the FAA and three landing incidents involving Q400s flying for Scandinavian Airlines forced Frontier to cover the first 10 weeks Lynx routes with its own mainline fleet of CRJ-700s and Airbus A319s. The Associated Press reports that Northwest Airlines is asking a federal judge to let the company adjust pension contributions to get more to younger pilots who suffered disproportionately from the company's post-bankruptcy shift to a 401k plan. Northwest and the Airline Pilots Association have agreed to the plan, but a group of older pilots is crying age discrimination. When Northwest froze pensions and started a 401k plan, its most experienced pilots had already maxed out their pensions, but became eligible for the company's matching funds in their 401ks at a high rate because their pay was high. Meanwhile, newer pilots got their pensions frozen with very little invested and got smaller contributions under the 401k, and that created a wide gap. Now the company wants to boost its contributions to pilots with fewer years on the job to make things more equitable. But the older pilots say that assumes they'll actually be paid their pensions, which could be canceled at any time in a future bankruptcy. Looking at recent airline history, that concern is certainly reasonable. There's no word yet on when a decision in the case is forthcoming. The new 401k matching plan started on December 1st. Jet Alliance, a California-based jet ownership company, tells ANN it is scheduled to take delivery of a second Eclipse 500, serial number 84, this month. As ANN reported, Jet Alliance took delivery of the world's first production very light jet at the end of last year, and co-owner Randall Sonata, chairman of Jet Alliance, says the plane has lived up to its goals. Quote, instead of VLJ, perhaps it should be known as VEJ for very efficient jet, unquote. In a move intended to further green its fleet, Jet Alliance is working with carbon offset provider TerraPass to offer owners of Jet Alliance aircraft the option to offset their carbon footprint for each trip. Jet Alliance was founded in 2000 and offers one-quarter shares in an Eclipse 500 for as little as $450,000. Still ahead, an Alaskan medevac helicopter tragedy brings back difficult memories. Operation Toy Drop is about more than toys. And blue ice is bad enough. This was neither blue nor frozen. You're listening to Aero News.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, December 13, 2007. I'm Paul Plack. It's looking more and more like we'll never know exactly what happened to a Lifeguard Alaska medevac helicopter, which went missing 10 days ago while transporting a patient from Cordova to Anchorage. But one helicopter pilot, who now flies Air Ambulance in California, remembers flying that same route as the missing Alaskan Hilo, and recently shared his memories of a particularly harrowing day with reporter Jason Moore of KTUU Television in Anchorage. 4 years ago, Michael Rugg was also working for Lifeguard and also made a flight to pick up a patient in Cordova. He says he had good weather on the trip out, and the forecast indicated it would hold, but it declined quickly as he neared Prince William Sound. Quote, about halfway, I started noticing there were clouds forming there at the mouth of Passage Canal, unquote. Rugg says he quickly found himself 50 feet off the water in a snowstorm with ice forming on the windshield and nose of the helicopter. He found a beach, landed, and waited till the storm passed. Quote, they praised me for the job I did, and I appreciated that. I knew as a pilot I felt bad because I never should have got into that situation, unquote. A memorial service will be held on Friday at 1 p.m. at the Lifeguard Alaska hangar for the four people on board the missing helicopter. The pilot, Lance Brabham, paramedic Cameron Carter, and patient Gay McDowell have not been found. The body of flight nurse John Stumpf washed up on a beach last weekend, along with debris including a sliding door from the helicopter. It's called Operation Toy Drop, but they don't actually drop toys. The 10th annual Randy Oler Memorial Operation Toy Drop, named after the Sergeant First Class who started it, offered U.S. Army and Air Force paratroopers and jump masters from Canada, Chile, Germany, and Ireland the chance to work together in exchange for donating a toy or two to benefit needy kids. The annual mission attracts international jump masters and U.S. soldiers eager to earn their international jump wings. The majority of the event is run by Fort Bragg's Civil Affairs and Psychological Operations Unit. The airlift was provided by the 2nd Airlift Squadron and 95th Airlift Squadron, Air Force Reserve. Last Saturday morning, hundreds of paratroopers were lined up at the Sicily drop zone at Fort Bragg. At timed intervals, C-130s landed and the soldiers marched onto the aircraft with engines still running. Within 5 minutes, the huge planes took off again, and a short time later, the soldiers jumped as hundreds of family members and friends watched from the ground. Mission Commander Captain Adam Shockley, a navigator with the 43rd Airlift Wing, said everybody wins in this operation. Quote, this is the first year the 440th is a player, and we're seeing integration between the active duty and reserve, and learning from each other in the process. We're also seeing the Army and Air Force work together, and including the foreign jump masters. It's really an amazing operation, unquote. More than 1,050 soldiers jumped in this year's Operation Toy Drop. Residents of Lisle, Illinois have been advised to use a solution of 1 part chlorine bleach to 10 parts water to clean up what fell in their yards and on their roofs last Sunday night. But residents want police and the FAA to figure out how what appears to be human waste wound up falling on their neighborhood. The affected homes included 3 or 4 lots along Arborview Drive. Resident Mark Sickinger said there were numerous splotches marring the Christmassy look of the snow-covered roofs and lawns. But could it just have been vandals? Quote, "This is a flight pattern for O'Hare, and a lot of times there's planes flying overhead. I figured it was from a low-flying airplane," unquote. Rains this week helped by diluting the mess and washing it away. The FAA says it will investigate. It's considered to have happened too early in the month for reindeer to be suspect. And finally, the New York Times is generally considered to have one of the nation's more liberal editorial boards. But every once in a while, it occurs to even the Times that government may be getting bloated and ineffective. In a scathing editorial this week titled "Screening Dreams," Times columnist Clark Kent Irvin ranted about the Transportation Security Administration, accusing the agency of merely going through the motions to convey a false sense of security to airline travelers. Irvin cites recent cases of testers slipping potential bomb components through checkpoints. He's also alarmed at the on-again, off-again TSA ban on liquids and gels in carry-ons, noting that even large bottles of liquids and gels can now be purchased at airport stores inside the security checks. Irvin concludes, quote, "If it's better to be lucky than good, TSA, so far at least, has it made," unquote. Okay, but what I really want to know is, after your parents named you Clark Kent Irvin, did you even consider any other career? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Otis Cameron, Business Development Manager at JP Instruments. We'll talk about how modern electronic monitoring can help you get the most from your aircraft. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.